For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
We are talking structure. How are our teams going to be shaping up when it comes to round one? We're going to go deep dive into how you should set up each line in your fantasy team. You're talking and you're listening to the Ball Boys. Let's go!
Hodge has done it from nowhere. Hodge did the goal from inside the team. Sheed from the boundary. Dusty!
G'day and welcome again to the Ball Boys AFL Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, Mitch Casey, and you can find me on Twitter at Ball Boys Fantasy. And alongside me, as he is with most podcasts these days, Luke Rogerson, mate. How are you?
I'm good to be talking to the Ball Boys.
Yeah, shut up. Like, I stuffed up that intro.
Butchered it.
We weren't going to re-record it. We're going to go again. One take.
Push forward.
One take,
even if it's dog shit.
Yeah, nah, we don't do any editing on this podcast. We just get in, we say
it. I'm sure they couldn't tell. I'm sure everyone thinks this goes so smoothly all the time.
There's never any issues.
Never any issues. Talking about never any issues.
Yes.
If you are having issues with your AFL draft, which we often do because I just feel, between you and me, the platform doesn't offer enough features, the traditional platform. What you need to do is get over to Keeper Fantasy. We're excited to announce the launch of Keeper Fantasy and all the little tools and treats that they have for us.
Lots of treats, lots of features. So if you are a fantasy draft player, or if you want to get involved in draft and you haven't before, Keeper is the perfect place for you guys to start that up. So head to Keeper and sign up for either your redraft leagues. They do, as the name suggests, they have Keeper leagues, they have Dynasty leagues. You can run category leagues, Luke, which I'm a big fan of. You can talk about that. Lots of other features, fab budgets, lots of things, anything you can basically think of, Keeper has it over there. So would highly, highly recommend if you are keen on doing AFL fantasy drafts. And you should, because it's a very fun way to play fantasy. Classic is great. We talk a lot about classic. But draft is just that. Mano and mano.
Well,
just bragging rights over your mates. And it's definitely a fun way to play fantasy sports.
If you're anything like me and your classic team's going to shit halfway through the season,
always rely on draft.
Head over to Keeper Fantasy and you got your stuff sorted. So I reckon we'll be putting links in the description and all the good things. Absolutely. But get over there and check out Keeper Fantasy.
For sure. What are we talking about today, Luke? We're talking about structure. Now, structure, I think, is one of the more important, but maybe under spoken about concepts, strategy elements in our starting squads, because a good structure, I almost could say, is more important than nailing all of your starting picks. You can start a fairly vanilla team or a team that even has a few mistakes, like Cam McKenzie, in your side, and if you have the structure right, the bones there, you can make good early trades and get your season off to a flyer because, as you like to say, it's all about pivotability.
Yeah, I think the two things are linked, and we'll talk about pivotability in isolation later on, but having structure gives you the ability to pivot, and like you say, you can kind of do a bit of patchwork on the way through these first few rounds to make sure that you still get off to a flyer.
So talk to me about some popular structures, and I've told you this before, but I always find it interesting, and I understand why, but as fantasy coaches, as content creators, we love to label things and package things in with a name.
Give it a name. If we can give it an acronym, even better.
Yeah. So mid-price madness versus guns and rookies.
Yeah.
You know, it seems black and white. You do one or you do the other. You can't do both. There's nothing in between. what One versus the other? Are we in one camp more than the other? What are your thoughts?
Sometimes it feels cut and dry like that, but obviously you got your tongue in cheek a little bit there when you're talking about nowhere in the middle. The thing is that I think is interesting is the Guns and Rookies was a really popular strategy up until the GOAT Selby came in and went, okay, we can get value out of these mid-price guys. Dominated the competition for a patch there. What I think is really interesting with the new way that we're having to navigate the buys, especially these early buys, I think it's brought in like a little bit of a renaissance. Is that the right word? When does it make a little bit of a comeback?
Say it with confidence. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of a renaissance for not Guns and Rookies, but just maybe having a few more guns in your early side as captain options and to get some points on the board early when other people may be floundering.
Counterpoint.
Okay.
I might butcher the stat. I think it was Selby that said this, but Chris's team last year had the most amount of mid prices in his starting squad compared to the last five winners in AFL fantasy. So
that was with the early
buys. And that was the first year we had the early buys. So despite the early buys, where there was one extra than there will be this year, the winner of AFL fantasy still had plenty of mid prices in his team. So personally, and we might as well bring this together because it's the next dot point on our spreadsheet here, but the early buys it's the change, the most recent change to our fantasy team.
Yeah.
I don't think it should change too much of our thinking than maybe what some people are thinking. It's three rounds at the end of the day, and it's three rounds at the beginning of the season where we're flipping and changing and moving things around. We don't have a lot of data yet, so in terms of like how it changes the way I approach my starting squad from like structure point of view,
it
hasn't really changed too much the way I think about it. I'm not more leaning to the Guns and Rookies because three of the first four rounds I get to drop off my four lower scores. To me, that's too small of an impact for me to change my philosophies completely.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you there. And I think ideally, the way fantasy is at the minute as well, some of the rookies that come into our teams, they're not chumps. They come in and they perform well. And then you're obviously picking mid-prices who you expect to become either underpriced premiums or they, you know, can score in line with those guys as well. So value, I think, is still the name of the game. And we should be looking to try and pick value in almost all of our positions.
And the other thing about the early buys is, you know, yes, you could talk about the scoring on field and you're dropping things off, but the cash generation is the other big thing, you know, and that's almost more important, especially in these early rounds, because if you're picking guns at the top of their price point that are fairly priced or overpriced, you're sacrificing the ability to make cash and have that that team value grow. Whereas if you're trying to find the value, and this is where I love to shop, those underpriced premiums, those players that you can comfortably sit in your side for 16, 17 weeks, but maybe a 10, 15 points unders, those are the guys that allow you to have one less rookie on the field, be a trade ahead when it comes to that trading cadence in upgrade season, and that puts you a step ahead of the competition. So,
before we talk about structure possibilities on each of the lines, I just want to say one more thing and jump in if you think I'm talking out of my ass. But I think there's a popular way of thinking during the preseason, and sometimes we fall into it as well, where we definitely field a lot of these questions where it's, oh, should we be starting two rookies in the forward line? Or how many rookies can we start in defense? You know, how many mid-prices can we start in the midfield? The answer, and it might sound like a little bit of a cop-out, is we don't know until we've seen all the preseason games, because the old adage, and this is definitely something that we didn't invent, is rookies dictate your structure. So we need all the
best. I've heard that before somewhere.
we need all the best rookies. Like, we want all the best rookies, the rookies that have good job security, high scoring potential. So we get them all in and then we go, okay, well, turns out there's three, you know, great rookies in defense that are going to play for their teams and are going to score well. Awesome. Yeah. Let's build our team based on that. Or there's not as many in the midfield this year, so you build your team. So if we don't give you like a hard and fast answer to that question, that's the reason.
Well, I think there's also like, it's hard to know the answer because there's been teams that have been successful in different ways. Like, I know DT Lemon, he often starts maybe an extra rookie to some of the other people out there. I know Selby was very much the mindset of limit the amount of rookies on field as much as possible. So both You know, lots of more than average rookies and fewer than average rookies have been successful. You know, last year I started, I think, with five rookies, and after round one, I brought an extra rookie onto field in Ollie Dempsey because I thought, you know, the cash was too good to miss out on. So yeah. The other thing is like being flexible with your structure in terms of just because you're bringing on a rookie onto your field doesn't mean you're taking a step backwards if they've got the goods. Do you know what I mean? And that's what we're going to talk about later with pivotability in terms of having that ability to shape and shift. And I think those mid-price players just allow you, more so from a psychological standpoint, to be that flexible, because it's very hard to, after like one or two games, go, I'm gonna trade out Andrew Brayshaw. Or I don't like what I'm seeing from Bont, you know, after two games, because these are guns. Like, they're going to do their thing. It's very hard to trade Bont if he comes out and goes 100-100. But if a mid-price comes out and doesn't do what you want them to do, okay, we'll see you later, I'm on the next guy. And then it's just a little bit easier to be a bit quicker to the punch with those guys. Let's talk defense.
Now, this is the first question we've got here, is how many rookies do we trust on the field? So it's the question that I said there's no answer to. But it's the question is more phrased from what we've seen so far.
Yes.
Are there any rookies that are putting their hand up? And then the back end of that is, if not, do we have to pay up?
Yeah, so, and this comes from also years gone past as well. The defense rookies are typically not the most reliable.
There always seems a little bit of a shortage there, hey?
There always seems to be the guys there that are maybe low scorers or players that have dodgy job security, or, you know, it's just a position historically the last 3 or 4 years we haven't seen a plethora of them come through. So, from what it stands so far, the guy that I have seen, that I've liked what I've seen so far, is Bo Allen. Zach Reed still leaves me with question marks. Saad El-Hooley leaves me with question marks. We're waiting to see players like James Leake, Toby Trevallia. The question of how many players can we trust on our field, I think, is also linked with how many players in total are there, because if you start having two rookies on your field, even if they're solid, what are the rookies on your bench looking like?
Yeah.
Are there 4 or 5 rookies that we actually are confident are going to make us 200-300K? At this stage, again, I haven't seen all the rookies play, I'm open to be wrong, but at this stage, I don't think there's as much depth in this line as there are in the other lines.
And this is where that pivotability ties in, because like you say, you might have 4 guys that you think are red hot in defense. So, oh, okay, 4 guys, well, we can play 2 rookies on field.
Mm.
If it goes wrong, where do you pivot? If they drop off a cliff after 4, then you're in a world of hurt. So maybe the more, I guess, safe play is to just play 1 rookie on field in defense, so that you've just got like a little bit of cushion there if something is to go wrong.
Because I can understand the temptation in a line like this, where a lot of people are saying the defense is hard to pick. It's hard to pick. We don't like our options. Well, the logic, it makes sense. If you don't like your options, just go cheap, you know, just go down to a rookie. And so if there were good rookies there, I'd be all for it and saying, yeah, like, just maybe have an extra rookie in your defense, because you're sort of punting on those other positions anyway. But, you know, that, you know, little saying that someone once said somewhere a long time ago, that rookies dictate your structure. I think we have to go with the rookies first, then piece in the mid prices and premiums and stuff like that. So, look, I'm crossing my fingers that some guys put their hands up. I'd be very open to doing that. But for what it's worth right now, I think they're a little bit low. So if we are spending up,
yeah,
what are some price brackets or positions or players, and also buy rounds that we're trying to juggle in the defense that need consideration? Like, for example, there's like the Callum Mills price bracket, where you've got him, Perryman, I think Roberts is close to that price bracket as well.
Callum Mills has been sitting at D4 for me for a lot of the preseason, and I think a little bit of it is wishful thinking that I can plug somebody in to D5 that I'm kind of happy with, that's in that next price bracket down.
Yeah.
But even that being said, D1, 2, and 3 for me is probably that combination of positions is changed more than anything else in my team at the moment. But at this stage, I'm paying up a little bit more for those 3 positions. Not right to the top, not to Sheasel currently as it stands, but at the moment I've got 3 more expensive players in there.
So what are the players around that, let's call it like below 700,000, that sort of we're looking for or like the look of? So the guy I think that's my favorite is Sam De Koning, 564,000. I think if he is the number one ruck, he fits a very nice spot as your D5. Schoenmaker, you've talked about Josh Sinn before.
Sinn, if he gets some of those Houston points, could be a guy that sits in that role. I mean, Kitty Coleman was the guy that we were all hoping.
And he's still 26% owned. So if you've got Kitty Coleman in your side right now, he won't be there round one or round zero. So I make an adjustment now. But yeah.
It's an interesting position. And I think we do need to be ready if somebody doesn't put their hand up in that position for what we're going to do. So I would suggest playing with structures met where maybe Callum Mills moves to D5. And you pay up from there as well.
Yeah, see, I at the moment, my team, it's not like I've got a few iterations on my team, but I have tried to put together a structure where a Callum Mills, or right now I've got Harry Perriman sitting there at D5. He's the same price, exactly the same price. So effectively, Callum Mills at D5. Just to see how it looks and how the rest of my side needs to structure up to make that happen. So I agree with you. I think at least explore it now. So it's not a rush if something doesn't go your way, come, you know, those team sheets in round one.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, I mean, some structure in the midfield. The midfield is just, we could talk probably for hours just about the midfield because of the way that we could shape up and like the variety of ways that I think we could shape up. There's players that are expensive that people like the look of, and then there's a host of what we would consider underpriced premiums, and then it's like it's a mid-price bonanza.
It is. It does seem that way.
You look at it. So
I've heard both structures argued. Some people I've heard talk about paying up for your midfielders. You know, the best 18 argument, getting your guns. The fact that the midfield, even at the top end, are cheaper. Like, we've got no midfielder that's averaged more than 110, which is unique to this year. Usually there's 115 guy, there's 117 Bont last year, Rory Laird the year before, all those kind of guys. They're not here this year. So even the top price guys are kind of undervalued. And then there's also the argument where there just seems to be so many of these mid prices that on the surface look good. You know, Hollands, Peatling, Will Day, Chera, Doherty, Clayton Oliver. You got a little bit more expensive. You got Petrarca, Rosie, Tim Taranto. You know, bloody Dylan Shield put his hand up before. Yeah. Nathan O'Driscoll. Then you've also got this rookie crop.
Yeah.
Which is one of the better midfield rookie crops we've had in a long time. It really is a question of how do you fit all these in? Where do you lean in terms of like which are you trying to fit in more value mid prices? Are you happy running with the three rookies? Have you tried two? What's your thoughts so far?
This for me is like the perfect question of pivotability. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's say you went balls to the wall and you picked all those mid prices and your most expensive midfielder was, I don't know, let's call him, it's not going to be a Clayton Oliver, let's call it like a Connor Rosie or something like that.
Tim Taranto. Those 900,000 kind of guys, below a million.
Let's say you have a couple of those mid-prices fail. It's very hard to go all the way up.
Yeah.
From there. So that leaves me a little nervous that, let's say, you know, I get a couple of those mid-prices failed. I'd have to bring one all the way down to a rookie to get enough cash to get up to a Taranto or to a Brayshaw or someone like this. So by that logic, is it worth making sure that you've at least got a couple of these kind of expensive midfielders there that you can pivot down if required?
I almost think the other way. Okay. I think that because of the confidence, and this might be proven wrong in 2 weeks when we see them in practice matches, but because of the perceived confidence we have in the rookies in the midfield, your Jagger Smiths, your Levi Ashcrofts, your Harvey Langford, Xavier Lindsay,
so you're saying Lawler, leave them out and then potentially go down to them if required.
Yeah, because then you go, okay, I've got options below that I like. I have options above that I like.
Okay.
So I have flexibility in either direction. So if, for example, a Hollands falls flat or a Peatling falls flat, It is a pretty easy thing to go, all right, Peatling down, Oliver up. And you can probably get Hollands to, you know, someone like a Brayshaw or something like that.
How many good rookies would you be willing to
I still want the best ones. Let me put it this way. I still want the best ones.
I was going to say how many, but I don't want to make this a give me a number kind of
shout. I think you want at least four really good midfield rookies. At least two on your field and at least two on your bench that you've paid up for.
Okay.
And by doing that, you're not sacrificing the ones that are going to fly up in cash, but you may sacrifice some of the ones that earn money, but maybe aren't like, you know, last year, like for example, even someone like O'Riley Sanders, he was a good cash maker, but he wasn't like gangbusters.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So if it comes down to, can you pick them right or things like that? You're obviously limiting yourself by reducing the number, but I always find it easier to go down from a mid-pricer to a rookie than to, if I've missed a mid-pricer, well, how do I get them? I go on a premium down and I go on a rookie up. Like that to me is a harder hurdle to get over. And there just is quite a few that I do like at several different price points. Like I think there's probably like four price points, right? There's the guys that are just over a million. The two players that I like the most are Andrew Brayshaw, Jordan Dawson.
Yeah.
Which are like 105 type guys that I think can go 110 plus. There's the guys priced under 100 that I think can go 105 plus. Connor Rosie, Tim Taranto, Petrarca might be in that mix as well.
You know where your business would be without you. Imagine where it could go with more of you. Well, with Wix, you can create a website with more of your vision, your voice, your expertise. Wix gives you the freedom to truly own your brand and do it on your own. With full customization and advanced AI tools that help turn your ideas into reality. Scale up without being held back by cookie-cutter solutions and grow your business into your online brand. Because without you, your business is just business as usual. Take control. Go to Wix.com.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Then you've got the below 800,000 Oliver, Wilday, Chera, Doherty. Then you've got a price even further down in Hollands and Peatling. And then you've even got Nathan O'Driscoll putting his hand up as well as like a 400,000. So in terms of pivotability, like
lots of places to go to.
There's lots of places to go to. I think there's quite a few of them I could see working out.
I think that's
and options to go from. So it's interesting though, because then you start talking about captain options. Like if you want to get all the cheap guys, you've got to make room for your side. Are you then sacrificing a captain option by maybe going a Rosie at M1? Which is a structure I've played around with. It's not fill me with confidence.
You'd be relying on his run there. And a lot of people have Sherry in their ruck line who, based on the end of last year, you'd want to put the captain on him every week. But I'm not as convinced about how he starts the year. A little bit of a tougher run, I think. And then also we know his first half, second half of last year split too.
Yeah. You see my stats about Sherry? Against his first nine opponents last year, he averaged 100 and just over 102.
I mean, it's reflective of his first half of the year. I know all nine of those teams.
That includes two games where he versed Tim English and went 120 plus both games.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So there's some low ones in there.
Yeah, I think his lowest game was against Jared Witts and the Suns, where he did score like a 50. So that does drag his average down a fair bit, but. Yeah. Yeah, I just thought that was interesting, and I contrasted that with my boy Tim English.
Oh, of course you did.
Who went 109.
You've talked him up so much, you're going to have to pick him.
We'll see. He's definitely within calculations for me. Anything else on the midfielder you want to touch on? Do you think that our utility is going to be like a mid-bench, or there's also a few forwards that maybe be putting their hands up as well? So,
yeah, currently if we have a playing R3,
I might also go with a playing utility, and that could be a midfielder, especially like you say, if you pick quite a few mid prices there and you feel like you don't want to miss out on some of those highly touted midfield rookies, there's every chance that I could go 30 green dots off yeah. the top and make that position.
Yeah, who knows? I might even go that way as well. I might be converted. Let's talk about the rucks. Now, our R2 for a lot of people, but for me, all rucks, R1, R2, are very much up in the air. Although it feels like we've maybe only got 4 or 5 options to choose from now.
Yeah, it's gone from a plethora to just nothing, hasn't it?
Yeah, so is this where you're spending up? If you're saving cash in the midfield, you're saving cash in the forward line. Are these where our captain options and a lot of our cash is going to go, do you think?
I think it could, but like I said, I'm not as big on Sherry to start the year as a out-and-out captain option. He's currently sitting at R1 for me. And Tom De Koning's sitting at R2, and whether that's wishful thinking or just hopeful that Pitnet's not there, perhaps. But I don't want to confront that problem of where do I go with R2 if it's not De Koning. And I'm kicking that can down the road, unfortunately.
Let me ask you this question when it comes to Tristan Sherry. I want to go through some of his matchups in the first sort of 6 or 7 rounds. And whether or not you'd be comfortable whacking a straight C on him.
Yep.
And expecting a 110 plus.
Yep.
Because that's what we want when we're paying up for a 114 priced out player. The first game is easy. Tim English. I'd personally be very comfortable going, yeah, he's a C. Don't care. I'm pretty confident he's going to be 110 plus. Yep. Round 2 against Melbourne against Max Gawn.
You're less so. Especially when we noted the that stat that what increased for Sherry wasn't his tackles.
Possessions and marks.
It was possessions and marks, yeah. and Max Gawn is elite in the air.
Yeah, so if I haven't done my big boys yet, but I'm not convinced he's a top 5 option on the big boys in that round. Just total gut feel and not assessing the other options, but that's not what you want from a 110 price out figure. Adelaide.
Riley O'Brien.
I think that's a bit better.
Yeah. You can cuddle each other all day, but again, I think he's going to beat Riley O'Brien around the ground comfortably. Yeah. But
so let's say that's 2 out of the first 3.
Yep.
All right. Sydney. Now, for reference, last year, Sydney was the second hardest matchup for rucks.
Says it all. That's the data we've got to go on.
So whatever you think of Max, Sydney's probably tougher.
Yep.
So I'd put a line through that. Gold Coast.
Jared Witts.
That's where he scored his 50, 57, I think it was. Yeah. Now, we have to assume that Jared Witts is going to be there. If it's Ned Moyle, then it's a different story. But I think that's probably out of the top 5 again.
I mean,
so there's 3 out of the first 5 where you're going, I'd rather him be a VC than a C.
There's question marks. I guess that's what you're trying to get across. And so let's say I take him out and I put Tim English there, as you want me to do.
Hey, you do whatever you want, mate.
And Tom De Koning doesn't come up. Where to then?
Yeah, Tom De Koning is the key here. Look, he's been in my side all year. But if he's not solo rucking, then you can't go there.
No.
So I think if he isn't an option, it does make it tough to go away from Tristan Sherry. The other thing with Tristan Sherry is his ownership is so high. And I try not to look at ownership. But I'd be lying to you if I told you it wasn't scary to go against him if I was to choose to not go that way.
Yeah.
So if there are other options that I'm not super confident in, then maybe it is the safer thing just to make sure that I'm not hurt by that. But yeah, I think De Koning is the key to maybe that other one. I know a lot of people may be considering English as R2, but I almost think that English at R1 feels a little better. Like, if Tom De Koning isn't, if he's solo rucking in round 1, I'm prepared to take that leap. And if Mark Pitnet comes in a few rounds, I'll deal with that then, because the other options, I don't see a whole lot of value. I want at least lock away some value when I can for as long as I can.
The one structure thing I will say about the rucks that I'm just personally very against is 2 value rucks. And we've talked about it a couple of times, but that's purely from that pivot perspective. And the ruck is just naturally the position where we have less people to choose from.
Yep.
And so you've got less places to pivot. So that would be my word of caution for structure.
We'll spend just a tiny bit on this, but what are your thoughts on people doing a Liam Reedy or a Harry Boyd, say they're both named in round one? For this hypothetical, Harry Boyd is named with Rowan Marshall.
Yep.
We get confirmation that Sean Darcy's out till round five and Liam Reedy is named with Luke Jackson round one. They're both there. What do you say to people who are considering starting with those guys at R2 and R3? Do you think it's a play? Does it make you nervous? Are you going to lose sleep?
Yeah, I'm going to lose sleep. Well, I mean, you've got both of them there now and they're the only two of their kind.
Yeah. I mean, you could argue one gets dropped, like you've got a backup there, but
I guess, yeah, it's a backup and you're trading into a red dot at R3 because you're not going to get the cash to go up to somebody different. But even that just takes the wind out of your sails a little bit, I think.
I don't love it either.
Yeah, especially if Liam Reedy was poised to take the reins at Fremantle and Sean Darcy didn't exist, and we were confident that Harry Boyd was never going to see the likes of Rowan Marshall in his centre circle again, then you could have two guys that could be the best price increases of the season sitting there. But the fact that you're picking it with an expiry date of Liam Reedy, he'll make you some cash and then he just kind of stalls. I guess you could trade him down.
Yeah, I think the idea would be to trade him down
to a red dot at that point. Yeah, cash
or
in.
Trade him up if you've got both these guys.
Maybe I'm being a little bit cynical and a little bit stuck in my ways, but it's not something I'm entertaining.
I think there's a lot of downside risk is how I would say that. I think there's a lot of downside risk and I don't know if the upside risk is like super high. Like I don't see Reedy being like, he played two games last year and scored like 50s and 60s. He scored 79 against a dude I've never heard of before in that Indigenous All-Star game. So I just don't think I can rely on the pedigree that is Liam Reedy, and Harry Boyd, his standing with Marshall in and out of the side, touch and go, is a bit sketchy for me as well. So I'm probably not there on those guys either. So let's talk about the forwards. Last line here. Now, the forward line, early days, we had the big four. There was a lot of question marks on who the other guys is. I feel like in the last couple of weeks, we've had a lot of players put their hands up in terms of options that present value, a lot of cheaper players as well. How do you think we are looking to structure up? I think one of the biggest questions is Jack McRae F1, or do you have someone else there, like a Jason Horne-Francis, like an Isaac Rankin, and you're going a bit, five premiums per se, or are you having two cheapies there and then the big three, and then a lot of people are rolling with Riley Sanders there at the moment?
Yeah, the F1 debate for me has been up in the air all preseason, and with these first few practice games, I got a little bit of a look at some options that if they continue to play that way in the right role that I don't mind the look of. Obviously, take it with a grain of salt with both Simkin and Horne-Francis playing for the Indigenous and Rankin playing for the Indigenous All-Star team.
Yeah, Simkin, forgot to mention him. He had a big game.
But yeah, and that was one of those ones where my thoughts on him having a big game is when you looked at that Indigenous All-Stars midfield, he to me stuck out as the only...
He's the accumulator.
Yeah, he was the only accumulator. The others are, all electric in their own way, and he just kind of wandered around and did his thing, which you would expect from a game like that as well. But, if he can do that at North Melbourne, then he comes into calculations. Rankin looked good without looking great, and then Horne-Francis just took the game by storm in different patches where you looked at it and thought, well, if I don't pick this guy, he's going to bend me over and give me the proverbial. So, I'm entertaining all of those options, but for the majority of the preseason, I've had McRae as F1 and then banking that we're going to have some rookies come into our life over the next couple of weeks that...
Yeah, so is your F5 then now someone other than Caleb Daniel? Like, have you got two guys under that price tag as your F5 and F6?
Yeah, so at this stage, it's two rookie-type operators. Mm.
So the players in that price bracket, you're looking at people like...
Hewitt.
Yeah, Hewitt, Hutchinson, Ryan Marish, who didn't play in today's game, unfortunately.
Some people looking at Silvani.
There's a few other cheaper rookies. Joe Berry, Kakko, Stone, Davison, make up your bench. So there's enough guys there. When we're talking about the defenders before, you go, okay, if I put two rookies in my defensive line, well, then maybe my bench looks a bit shaky. I don't think we have that issue in the forward line, at least at this stage. I think there's enough guys to fill those spots.
Yeah.
Whether or not they're better than the value guys, maybe a bit more expensive. I personally, and maybe this is just my skepticism on some of the cheaper guys, and I could be proven wrong here, but I have been hesitant to go down that path. I think I'm more looking at the value F1s in like a Rankin, even a Horn Francis, or even Jack Graham has been weighing on my mind a lot. Like if he can be a guy priced at like 60 something and go mid 80s, I think that's a really good pick as a guy that I can just hold. Whereas I feel like that F5, F6 could turn into a bit of a rookie roulette carousel kind of situation, you know, make it a bit hard to pick who's the guy each week. But I'm open to the other structure as well, because again, that would make other things in my team much easier to do. Might make it much easier to have some captain options in my midfield or pay up a bit more in defense or get a rookie off somewhere else. So I'm open to it, but I don't know. For some reason, I'm just hesitant to have that second rookie type player in my forward line.
Yeah, I think like I said, at the moment it's a little bit of wishful thinking. That hopefully somebody will put their hand up in the next couple of weeks and sort of force our hand. But
who have been the guys there at that sort of say, let's say 400,000 or below that you at this stage are maybe more keen on? Is there someone that you like the look of that you're happy to have on field?
I've just been running two rookies at that spot, yeah. And just when I...
So like a Connor Stone and a Hewitt or yeah, Davidson and a Hewitt? Or
rolling just rookie names through there in the anticipation that somebody puts their hand up. So, because from those guys that you mentioned in the price bracket just above that rookie, I don't really like any of them. It's more, like I said, hopeful. So
yeah,
that's where my head's at.
Yeah, like I said, the thing I think that goes for the forward line in that scenario is that there's enough depth there that I think that at least your bench will still be solid as well. You're not probably sacrificing cash gen. And hopefully by going down to those rookies, you're strengthening yourself somewhere else in the line. So I think
Erasmus is another name that we mentioned who did play well the other night for Fremantle. But it's the question mark for him is all about can he hold his spot and what role does he play?
Fife wasn't playing there. We didn't have Hayden Young. Is that right? Yeah. So still a few boxes for him to tick. So So I think that's a discussion there. We'll finish on pivotability. We've sort of been touching on it and hitting on it as we go along, but are there certain positions and or price points that you want to make sure that you at least pick someone in that price point to at least have a piece of and have an easy access to, if it's not that person, someone close to that price point that you can quickly jump across in the first few rounds? Is there certain areas of your ground? Like for me, it's the 700,000 mids. I want at least probably one. Oliver's going to be there and probably one more, I think.
Yeah, it's I mean, you rattled them off earlier in the podcast. There's so many tiers in the midfield this year. Often you don't have that. You'll have a big divide between guys we're looking at and then the next space. But it feels like there's a good distribution there. And so that's how my midfield's been shaping up so far this year, is kind of picking, you know, at least one guy through those tiers. Because like you say, if I've picked the wrong guy, it's going to be quite an easy trade to just switch over to the guy who is popping. If you kind of well out of the tier, then you have to make that decision that you mentioned. Is it, you know, do I try and find the cash to get somebody right up to them, or do I have to drop a premium that I don't want to cut out of my team as well? So, and for me, most of the preseason has been kind of an even distribution of guys in those midfield price brackets.
Mm-hmm. Like how many is too many at that price bracket? Like, because I have heard, again, the great man, I'll always listen when he says something, but Selby reckons that if he's confident on all of them, he's happy to go all of them. Which I've always hesitated to do that, because I sort of maybe don't back myself to go, all of these guys are going to hit. I'm almost hedging my bets to say, I think at least some of them are going to hit, but I don't back that all of them are going to go off simultaneously. Do you think that there's a number that's too many?
It would scare me to have Oliver, Day, Shiel. Maybe that's more Day and Shield have the same buy, so it just kind of adds a
bit like Chera and Doherty.
Yeah, if you had five, I think you might be pushing it.
Yeah.
I'm not as confident as those last two either.
Yeah, I'm losing steam on the Carlton boys.
Three starts to feel to me, and I mean three in that exact price bracket.
Yeah.
Because like I don't see a problem with going Oliver, Will Day, and then Peatling, O'Driscoll, because you're kind of distributing that. Do you know what I mean? You're dropping down a price bracket with Peatling and O'Driscoll.
What about the two 600 guys in Hollins and Peatling? They seem to be popular players. Can you have both of those guys, or do you feel like you have to choose?
No, I think you can have both of those guys.
I think so too.
Because, like you mentioned before, there's rookies and guys like, let's say, O'Driscoll is... I feel like O'Driscoll... This might be an early call, but I feel like O'Driscoll's going to be playing at Fremantle this season.
Yeah.
Is he going to be getting CBAs? Maybe not. But I think he's going to be one of their wingers.
Yeah.
So you have got... I mean, the reason for saying that is you have guys from Peatling and Hollins to go down to, potentially O'Driscoll. Someone else will throw their hand up, and then rookies as well.
Because these guys in that price tag, when you're starting getting below that 700,000, it's almost that they function the same as a cash cow. Like, they are there to make cash first.
Yep.
And then score solid second, because at least the other guys you can confidently hold them till after their buys. Like they're underpriced premiums in my book. So whereas Hollins, Peatling, like if they score 90, it's a win because of price or cash generation. But a 90 in the midfield is not going to get it done. Whereas like your 700 guys, you're hoping they're like 95-100, you know, which is just that little bit closer to the premiums, and you're sort of happy to hold those guys. So. I guess you know, you got to ask yourself, do you expect Hollins and Peatling to generate as much cash as the rookies? I think there is a world where that is possible and doable. And if that's the case, then they're smash picks. Same with Nathan O'Driscoll. So I think you've got to compare and contrast those guys from a cash generation point of view. So, yeah, it's very interesting. I think the midfield is where a lot of teams are going to diverge in terms of where we're going to... You know, be unique. You know, maybe our forward lines look a bit similar. Maybe the rucks also probably look a bit similar. But forward line defense, I think that's where a lot of our own flavor is going to come into it.
My head's hurting, mate. This is your domain, the intense strategy.
The structure.
This is where you need to get the lemon back on, because I can't keep up with you.
Yeah, well, the lemon loves structure, and so do we. Well, I do anyway. So if you have any comments, questions, drop them down in the YouTube chat below, guys. Make sure you get your questions in. And if you want to get your question answered by us on camera, on video, head to patreon.com/theballboys to get access to our exclusive Q&A podcast. And... you've only got a few weeks left to get into our cash league, where you have a chance at winning some money off us. And also, if you beat me in the rankings this year, you'll get half your Patreon money back as well, guys. But you have to sign up before round one starts. So if you haven't done that already, go and do that now. Get your chance to win some money from us. And yeah, we'll see you guys on the next podcast. Until then, laters. Bye.
Running a business is hard work. Building your website shouldn't be. With Wix, you can express your ideas, give direction, then leave the heavy lifting to AI, from site creation to branded content and images. Have fun with the details. Customize what you want, the way you want, and manage your whole business from a centralized dashboard with expert AI tools. Build, scale, and enjoy the incredible results. You can do it all yourself on Wix.
At Tanger Outlets, find all the best brands all on sale every day. Step into the season's newest arrivals and save big on the styles you love. Shop Under Armour, Michael Kors, Crocs, and more. With up to 70% off plus an extra 25% off for a limited time. Hurry in for amazing deals from the brands you love. Only at Tanger Outlets.